On the Tech Talk for Accountants show, Andrew Lassise shares helpful tips for accountants and the technology issues they face. Join Andrew and his occasional guests on our weekly episodes.
He's the president and founder of the Sombrero Apps Company. He's been named the top 100 most influential people in accounting by Accounting Today. He's been named one of the 40 under 40 honorees from CPA Practice Advisor. I could continue to go on with the accolades, but we'd be here all day and not have any show to give. David, how are you doing?
Not bad. Thanks for having me this morning. Bright and early.
Yeah, bright and early. So give us a little background on how you got into the accounting space and the podcasting world. What's sort of what led up to that point for you?
I bumped my microphone. Apologize to all the listeners here. So I fell into a job at Intuit in a way. I started at Intuit 21 years ago. At the time, I was working at the mall selling desktop box software. But I always, and at that time, like in the desktop world, those box software packages, Quicken was gigantic. I mean, Quicken and TurboTax were gigantic. I remember when the very first QuickBooks 1.0 DOS came out. And so I was working in a mall time. And then, you know, at that time, the mall software retailers got disrupted by Best Buy. Right? Best Buy came out and started selling all the software for like $28 and just pushed out anybody that was selling it. At that time, I think software used to be like $50 a box, right? And so basically they're selling it basically just at everybody else's cost just to gain market share. And so they declared bankruptcy and I was kind of like, I really need a job. And I Intuit had a call center here in Tucson and they were just fairly new still in Tucson. They were actually moving the call center from New Mexico over and I, you know, it was like, I needed a job. So I went and applied and started doing tech support for QuickBooks. At the time it was the QuickBooks version 4 for Windows just came out. And then I did tech support for all the way back to the QuickBooks DOS version. So my whole career essentially has been QuickBooks. I'm almost 22 years into it. I did tech support, quality assurance, product development, marketing, product management. I pretty much did every role except for commission sales. Right? I never had to move a certain amount of units of the green box out the door. In the last 6 years, I spent really heavily involved with the developer team. And bringing apps like the T-Sheets and Auto Entries and Hub Docs and all those add-on apps that add on to QuickBooks, bring them into the universe and in front of accountants and bookkeepers.
And so how do you determine what software is brought into that ecosystem? Is there sort of a vetting process or what does that look like?
I mean, there is a vetting process, but at some level you have to look at everything. Because there's, and there's historical like innovation data, like HP's had it in the past, IBM's had it. For every like good idea, you have to have 60 bad ideas, right? And this is a principle you can apply to a lot of things. And even Angry Birds, like that was game 52 for those guys. They built 51 other games first. Like you got to have a lot of like failure. So in order for every app like a T-Sheets that integrated with QuickBooks that turned into a home run, I had to deal with 45 to 60 crappy apps that I had to either look at or touch or vet. And you almost always have to take the meeting with the developer because there's plenty of times a developer will send you an email. And if you just go to their website and judge their app off of that, then there's plenty of times where like, oh no, that's our old app. Go to this new domain. And they give you the new URL. You type that up and like, this is the new cloud offering we're spinning up. Right. And so you kind of have to take every call. You kind of have to vet and look at every single app. And the way the process worked at Intuit, you know, people would integrate with QuickBooks. And then if they wanted to get on the QuickBooks marketplace and app store, they'd have to go through security review and jump through some more hoops as far as technical requirements and things like that. But from a vetting process, you just have to look at everything. And it's probably, it's kind of what, you know, probably the same for people dating. You probably just have to go on lots of dates. You don't go on one date and like, that's the person I'm going to marry, right? It's kind of that same thing, right? You have to go through lots of iterations of things to start to figure that out.
Do any bad first date apps stick out to you as being like some of the worst of the worst? And you could exclude the names, but just describe what you fell into.
I mean, there's a lot of apps that, you know, and this is kind of a learning I've had after I left Intuit, I started my own business. Right. And one of the things I learned about starting my own business was two things. One, I bought something on my first transaction, on my business credit card. I bought something. The invoice came in through email. I took the email. I forwarded it to Auto Entry. Auto Entry took it, shoved it into my QuickBooks. QuickBooks downloaded the bank feed. It all matched and everything worked. And I was like, this is amazing. Like all these things I've talked about, cloud accounting and apps and APIs, like it all connected and work in my own QuickBooks. It was pretty exciting. But the other part I learned really on that is my tolerance for apps that mess up my data has completely vanished. Like there's no tolerance for it. And now I really understand why accountants and bookkeepers have no tolerance for it, right? And so anyways, where I'm going with that, like I've had apps that just don't put data incorrectly into my QuickBooks. An example would be an app that scans a bill. Right, you scan the bill, and when it puts it into QuickBooks, it put the vendor name as me. I'm like, well, that's not the vendor. The vendor was Walmart. I don't know. I'm making that up, right? So this, like, when apps mess up your data, like, there's just no. I mean, that's the, like, the number one thing. And then I think, you know, I've looked at plenty of apps, and I think an app probably gets about 15 to 35 seconds of consideration from an accountant or bookkeeper, and I'll spend 12 minutes trying to figure out how to, like, get the app to connect or move data to QuickBooks. And then, and I know these apps fairly well and I'm pretty competent in it. And if I can't get it to work after like 10 or 15 minutes, that app's dead. It's not going to make it in market. It's just not. And so it can't, there's the list of how many weren't good is much bigger than the list. Like I said, it's a 60-to-1 ratio, but there's, you know, people take the time to figure it out. They talk to accountants, they listen to accountants, they build out the integrations they need to build out and you know, iterate through that and fix the problems. And then there's just apps that don't do it, you know, and then the ones that don't do it don't survive ultimately.
Are there any apps that come to mind where maybe the initial release wasn't as good as it could have been, you know, kind of the minimum viable product, but it got through, but then really, really took off over time? Do you have any examples of that?
Not entirely like that. Usually the, you know, it's the app and the team and the culture are sometimes more indicators of that, where they almost embrace the feedback they get and then go fix stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember even the first time I took a call with T-Sheets. I remember the very first phone call I took with them. And at that time in the API, in the QuickBooks Online API lifecycle, we were vetting every app just to use the API. Like we were super early in the process, not just the ones that got into apps.com. And I kid you not, at the time I was onboarding about 45, 46 apps all at the same time. And it was like pulling teeth to get a developer to change something or improve something. And it's like every single time you're just locking horns with people. And T-Sheets took a very first phone call with them. I viewed their app, gave them an email, walked through all the bullet points, boom, boom, boom. The next day they sent me an email back to like, here's our plan of attack. 2 weeks later, they fixed it all. And then, you know, the rest is history, right? But as soon as I got off the phone with them, I was like, that was different. Different culture, different company. The way they responded, feedback was different. So it's not so much an app that like started out poorly and then they reinvented themselves. You don't see a lot of that. It's either they kind of have it or they don't have it. But sometimes you don't know until you go through that process of like, hey, here's some things to fix. And everybody starts at the same spot. I mean, every app starts with not knowing this space, because I think if a developer of an app for small businesses, right, or an app for QuickBooks users, right, if you compare, like if somebody's making an iPhone app, chances are that developer probably used 60 other iPhone apps on their phone before, right? They have some like knowledge of like how an app's supposed to work on their phone, how it's supposed to interact with Apple and be a touchscreen app, right? But in many cases, my experience is the 99.9% of anybody building an app that adds on to like a QuickBooks or a Xero, they've actually never used anybody else's app that adds on to QuickBooks or Xero. So they reinvent the wheel from scratch every single time, right? So it's how they push through that is, you know, they have to listen to feedback because they don't know. They don't have the answers until they start talking to accountants and bookkeepers and learn it.
Yeah, we actually had and this is just one of those like serendipity moments. My best friend from kindergarten, and this was maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, however long, and he had posted on Facebook. He said, oh, my friend from college, his identity protection software app was featured on the Wall Street Journal. Check it out. And so it was just my kindergarten best friend, and so his friend and the owner of the company, they're called TrackOff, and I had reached out to them, and Rush was relatively large at this time, and that they were just two guys that like got a little traction, and I was just like, hey, we've got thousands of customers. We need an identity protection solution software. So I'm going to need you to build out a reseller portal. I'm going to need you to license it this way. This is what all of our other vendors look like. So I know it's just you two guys, but like, you know, let's see how this goes. And when you were describing that experience with T-Sheets, they were exactly like that. I mean, they recognized, hey, this might be a really big opportunity for us in a way that we had never thought about before. And so they built out this whole portal. They built out a whole reseller, like everything. And I made a bunch of introductions down here. They made a lot of money off of it. And they continued to grow the company too, despite us. So they weren't just riding on our coattails. They grew to, I believe, about 25 employees before Avast bought them last year. And now they're part of the identity protection development team. I forget what the product is called exactly in Avast, but they are basically that product. And it was very similar to your experience where, you know, they were a young company, but they took all of the feedback that our customers were giving them, all the feedback that we were giving them, and just were knocking it out left and right. Here's a weird, obscure issue with this bank in Minnesota that you guys didn't test out, and it's breaking the functionality. And it's like, okay, we've discovered this problem and fixed this thing. So all these, you know, it was like open the floodgates, and it was, you know, it was a risk for all of us, but they had that it, and the culture and the people involved were just on.
And it's extra important with accountants and bookkeepers, because if you think about an accountant or bookkeeper, when they use an app or they use a product and there's a problem, the accountant and bookkeeper versus a small business owner, there's a problem in an app. The small business owner is like, okay, this affects me. I can work around it, or I don't care, or I'll just not use the app. Don't care. But an accountant or bookkeeper, they run into a problem in an app and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to run into this 60 times, maybe multiple times a day per client, depending on what kind of an issue it is. So it's a different space when it comes to accountants and bookkeepers and the way they view and interact with an app and the level of priority you have to put on the things you fix.
At Rush Tech Support, we focus on your compliant IT so you can focus on accounting. Call us now at 844-881-7874. That number again is 844-881-7874, or email us at support@rushtechsupport.com to work with us. We specialize in tech support for accountants.
So what are some of the things we talked about? Culture, are there any other indicators that you see in apps that kind of make it and can get to the level that T-Sheets has gotten to?
I mean, I think there was always when I would vet out apps, even before I talked to them, there's always some things I'd look for. And I've talked about this in conferences for accountants and bookkeepers when you're kind of vetting out an app. I'm always looking for screenshots. I'm looking if you can self-onboard. Can you just sign up for a trial and use it and play around with it? Because my experience is if they don't have screenshots, usually they're not proud of their app, which means you're going to puke a little bit in your mouth when you go to use their app. It's going to look bad. Right? It's not going to be a good app. Like, it's not going to look good. It's going to be difficult to use. It's not going to be friendly. And then the other thing is if they don't have a way for you just to sign up and use the app without, you know, the whole book a demo workflow type stuff first, because usually the book a demo things, yes, I think it's a sales tool. It's a sales technique. But my experience is many times those apps just aren't ready for prime time. And what's happening is they put that up as a barrier because on the back end, they're manually like spinning up your instance of their app. Like they don't have the processes in to let you sign up for an app and just try it out. Right. And so I always look, and then I look for upfront pricing. Like if they don't have upfront pricing for a SaaS app in 2020, just move on. There's tons of other options. Like they have upfront pricing, screenshots, and then be able to just sign up and use it. And for many accountants and bookkeepers, that's usually how they want to interact with an app. They don't want to be sold to. They don't want to be pitched to. They want to try it out, figure out if it's working, look at the FAQs. You know, is this going to be a good fit for my clients, and move on. So I always looked at screenshots. Like I said, screenshots, pricing, and can I sign up for it?
And that's such a important piece of the direction of just the consumer world that we're in today, where no one really wants to talk to anybody and nobody wants to speak to the salesman that's shoving it down your throat. And when there's a product demo, you know, it's a controlled environment. So it's not going to break 99% of the time because you know what things to avoid, you know what things to highlight. So it's very, very scripted. And, you know, then you get into the product after going through the demo. We recently went through this with a company that does, they're a competitor of DocuSign. And it was, you have to book a demo in order to go through it. And, you know, the demo, it shows great and wonderful. And here's the integrations. Here's the problem with DocuSign that we uniquely solve. Blah, 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 blah. And then we finally get in to use the product after it was like a week that I had to schedule the demo out. And it's like, if you weren't the only solution in this very unique scenario that we were running into, it was like, there's a billion other competitors in this space, but we had to book the demo and then go through the whole process. And then, you know, when I'm out on my own trying to use it, it's like, this isn't intuitive at all. And when there's no competition, you got to kind of just, you know, swallow the pill. But you know, in the world that we're in today, where I just want to onboard my own stuff. I want it to be intuitive. I want it to be fast. I want it to solve my problems. And I don't want to have to speak to someone to explain to me why it works. Like, I should be able to use it and decide that it's better. And then you've got a long-term customer.
Right? You just want to ask questions of the things that don't work or the additional clarification. But yeah, and then some of this is from an embracing, and there's a really good book I recommend any of your listeners or people viewing this to check out. And you shouldn't have to read the book. Just go to the Clue Train Manifesto. Just Google Clue Train Manifesto and read the 95 thesis. This is like 12 minutes during lunch. Right. And it's a lot of it's about how markets are conversations, right? And kind of embracing the, and this was written before social media took off. So it's really the beginning of the internet, right? And that dismantling that hierarchy, right? That's in companies and the marketing and the infrastructure, right? And one of the things it talks about in there is that customers know more about your products than you do. And if you can embrace that as a app developer, right? You're going to appreciate the feedback you get better. You're going to understand that, yeah, sure, they may not have used your product, but they've probably used 6, 7, 8, 12 of your competitors' products. So they know every problem you have in your app before you know you have them. They know what things you're going to trip over, what things are not going to work in your app. And so if you can embrace that, and I think that DocuSign example is perfectly there. Like you said, there's 25 competitors. Most probably all have the same slight flaw. Right. And if you used one of them, you kind of know the gist of the others. You don't need anybody to hold your hand. You're going to be able to get in there and poke around. Sure, there may be a feature you can't find and you might want to get, you want to test the service and support, which is actually almost more important than testing the sales guy, because you want to have very good service and support. If you're going to pay for that app every month, right? It's a subscription, it's software as a service, right? And that service and support is important to have and get into that.
Yeah, it is funny though, when I was going through it, I was thinking this exact same thing of just like, you know, what if they weren't the only, because they integrate with our CRM and all these other things, and it's like, oh, built-in integration, which the built-in integration was a Chrome extension, so it wasn't even what they had claimed that it was, besides the point. But I'm with you. We need it to be intuitive, and the consumer, you know, we've used plenty of other DocuSign equivalents. I knew the exact problem I was trying to solve. And then when you're coming from a different software too, you know what you expect and like from the other one. And a lot of times I think on the user side of things, we'll kind of take for granted pieces that, well, what do you mean this feature doesn't exist? Like, I thought every DocuSign company had a click here to sign. Like, that should be included in all of them. What do you mean yours doesn't? What's the point? Kind of thing like that.
In full circle on this conversation, going back to you asking me about like vetting out developers or vetting out apps, right? A lot of app developers would be like, hey, let me demo my app for you. And I would like push back against that. Like, no, just give me like test login credentials and let me jump in. Because if I can't figure out your app and how to connect it to QuickBooks, and I'm pretty good in all these apps, I'm basically an expert, nobody's gonna be able to figure it out and you're in trouble. Like, if you have to handhold me through this app, you're in trouble. And so it's like your app's just not ready. Like you have to build your app. You have to embrace the fact that people aren't idiots. They're able to navigate and use your app and figure it out. Yeah, sure. There's always going to be these nuances and a deeper feature and Zoom's a good example, right? Like Zoom's easy to use. God forbid you want to change your subscription plan or preference, right? Like all that stuff's buried in there, but you can sign up.
It really is.
Really easy to use, right? And then give me help when I need that help, right? But I don't need help to, I don't have to go through a demo to use Zoom or to use Venmo. Like nobody's calling me to like, let me book a demo on how to use Venmo. You just jump in and you can use it.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your app and kind of the foundation of the Sombrero Apps Company?
Yeah, so Sombrero Apps Company has kind of evolved a little bit. Left is a pretty big umbrella company. I hadn't had this vision where, you know, I was going to, all right, I'm going to really help niche apps go to market more, right? And then the Sombrero is ultimately the hat of all the working hats. Like it's the king of the working hats, right?
You have the sombrero hats, of you working have hats.
Chef hats, right? Like the sombrero is the hat of all working hats, right? And so, you know, I had the slogan, like it's apps for the many hats of small business. And it was really to figure out how to bring niche apps into the accounting space more. Because a niche app that, let's say you're a brewery app, it doesn't make sense for you if you're a brewery app to go to a big convention like QuickBooks Connect to talk to the four accountants that might be doing breweries, right? It just doesn't, logistically, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense from a money standpoint, et cetera. But it could make sense if you take a bunch of niche apps like that, a brewery app, a dentist app, et cetera, and help bring them to market for accountants and bookkeepers. So kind of loose plans like that, but then, you know, the world kind of turns around, places go different ways. And, you know, podcasts took off. So it's became like a little bit more of a marketing company in a strange way, right? It's more of a bigger entity where, yes, I'm doing some, you know, it was doing some app consulting and helping bring apps to market, but also, you know, put on a conference, accounting salon, the podcast. I'm soon to launch a podcast network. So these are different things that are falling under this umbrella. You know, it's an empire at some level from our company itself. And then I still have a real job. I'm now at Melio Payments. And so, and we just, I'm the head of bookkeeping evangelism, accounting and bookkeeping evangelism there. And we just rolled out all our accountants features. We're just unwrapped those basically last week. We're just starting now. Today might be the first day we're going to start doing some marketing of that. And so it's free B2B business payments. And the founders, in fact, I know I'd mentioned Venmo before. They used to be at PayPal when PayPal bought Venmo. And so the whole premise is the basic money movement, right, is free. Like businesses should be able to move money back and forth for free. And so it's super easy to use. You can sign up, you can use it for free, and you can move the money for free. Now, if you pay through a credit card, if you want money faster, yes, there might be fees for other things in the future. But the basic, like if I have to pay you, Andrew, I'm a small business, I need to pay you. I should be able to pay you without jumping through hoops and fees and using a crappy bank website or sending you, handwrite you a paper check. Like it's a very easy way to pay business to business payments. So overhead, I got the podcast, you know, I'm launching a podcast network on the back burner that's, you know, because of COVID has taken forever. You know, over here, I'm over at Melio Payments. So it's just lots of things in the back burner, but it's all QuickBooks related. It's all app related. It's all accounting related. It's all in the same muddy waters.
So a bigger topic that's probably a big thing in your life, time management, work-life balance. What are some of the tactics or tools that you use when you've got all these things on your plate to kind of keep it all without falling apart?
Oh, it's a complete mess. Like I would love to be able to say, I would love.
Darn, I was hoping you had the solution.
I really wish I had some magical system. A lot of it is, it's not cutting corners, but it's shaving seconds here and there, right? You're connecting two apps together through Zapier. I have an admin that helps out and does some things. Blake and I have, you know, with my co-host of the podcast, so Blake and I, we kind of have a good rhythm in a system down, separation of duties, right? And, you know, you get into that rhythm and making some tough calls. Like it's great to have a guest on a podcast. It really is. But, as soon as you have three people's calendars, you have to get aligned. So there's two co-hosts and a guest. It's very hard logistically to pull that off, and it spends a lot of time, right? And so you have to make some tough calls sometimes. I'm like, we just can't do guests in our podcast. It just, neither one of us have the time to do it. And logistically, it's very hard because, you know, we have Friday evenings or Saturday mornings, we cut the podcast. And for a lot of people, that's not going to work for their schedule. And then it's very hard to get three people's schedule aligned. So, you know, tough calls on those types of things. I big fan of a unified inbox, right? Because even with me being accessible and being out there, emails about Melio will come to my personal email box, and emails about the podcast will come to my Melio inbox, and, you know, people will send me LinkedIn messages and Twitter direct messages and text messages. And so getting all that into one spot does help a little bit, but I'm far from, like, I'm effective and I get a lot done, but there's a lot that just builds. And like, you can never dig out to the bottom of that inbox, and I do not have the secret. And I think the lack of it is I'm not good at saying no. And it's just a skill set I cannot seem to nail down.
Yeah, that's one of those pieces that you hear a lot in, like, there have been a lot of books recently about it. The name escapes me. I want to say it's essentialism?
Or minimalism, something. Right? Like, cutting back.
Minimalism? Yeah, the author's name escapes me. But the idea of if it's not a hell yes, then it's a no. And kind of just laser focusing. And this time last year, I mean, I had so many things on my plate, plus a newborn. And, you know, I was just kind of wearing it as like a badge of honor that, yeah, I do 70 different things and I run all these different companies and I put out all these fires every single day and I'm the most productive human being in the world. And it worked until it didn't. And then, very much like you said, you know, you say yes to everything, and then you don't have the ability to actually say yes to the giant things. So I had come to the realization we were doing web design and we were doing tech support. Web design was bringing in, we'll say, maybe 3,000 to 4,000 per month, and tech support was bringing in over 300,000 a month. So if we just look at the impact, if the web design portion didn't exist, that's 1% hit to our top line. And it was the biggest pain in my side to be getting all these projects done and managing all these people. And it was like, if this doesn't exist, my life is way better. And we did it. And I ended up making arrangements with the employees that we had where they were taking care of our clients. And so I wasn't doing any of the work, no headache. I was taking, it was maybe like 5 or 10% just for the, here, I put these in your lap, and they got to do their own things and be on an entrepreneurial journey. And it was like, this is so much better. And then I got to focus on the big monster that Rush Tech Support is. And it was like, this makes so much more sense. But I was dedicating so much time to trying to do everything because we had one client that said, do you do web design? And instead of saying, no, we don't, I was like, yes, we do. And we're going to start a whole company for this one client. And she was it was like the worst client you could imagine, just top to bottom. Everything went wrong and she didn't like everything that was best practice in the way that it should be done. And then wanted us to incorporate Flash everywhere. And it's like, you can't do that anymore. And she's like, I don't care. And then she's mad her site doesn't rank. And we tell her it's Flash. And she says, make it happen. It is wonderful headache for no
and
money.
I think that's a struggle accountants and bookkeepers have, right? Where they get the scope creep, right? Or you, especially as accountants and bookkeepers try to scale better and scale their services, you know, they define an offering and then you get that exception, that ask, right? And then you either stick to your guns and say no, but if you say yes and take it, you got a really value bill for it, right? Or charge a whole different route for it. Like, hey, we don't normally do this. If you want me to do this, you're going to have to pay 5x normally rates. Like, because those things, you're right, they do become a big distraction. The only thing I was going to add on, the other thing I kind of do is once COVID hit, right? And you're just on Zoom calls all the time. Like, it's so physically exhausting. I've really, in the last like 3-4 weeks, I've been fiddling with my calendar, but now I've opened it wide open. Mondays and Tuesdays, it's wide open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. You want on my calendar, get on my calendar. So like, those days are draining. I just do nothing but Zoom calls, like back to back to back to back for like 12 hours. But on Wednesdays by 1 p.m., I'm done. There's no more. You can't get on my calendar after 1 p.m. on Thursdays, 11 a.m. And you can't get on my calendar at all on Fridays. I just had to like stagger the week differently because it doesn't seem like much. But if you take 4 hours of Zoom calls, 5 hours of Zoom calls every day and then think, oh, I'll spend the last 3 hours of my day being productive, you're just you're gassed. You just can't do it.
No.
Like the Zoom calls are just so mentally exhausting. So
they are.
I'm trying to like structure my week where it's very heavy meetings and it goes like this and kind of tips midweek, and it helps a little bit. But it also feels like, you know, like you have to structure that to where, okay, maybe Friday is going to be your productive day where you're going to try to get some creative thinking in, which means now you're using Wednesday and Thursday to play catch up. But even now with that schedule, like sometimes you're still playing catch up on Friday, right? So there's definitely no perfect scenario that doesn't involve you working Saturdays and Sundays too, right? It never ends. There's a lot, and right. I don't have the formula for it. But I also feel like it's hard to say no, and I like having lots of stuff on the back burner because there's plenty of times where, because of that, you get that serendipity. You're like, oh, I get this other person I kind of half-assed worked on a project before way in the past, and this other thing over here. And like, if you two work together, like this is like now we have something, right? And so it's kind of, there's some advantage to having that like back burner stuff going, but from a day-to-day like personal productivity, it is not productive to do any of that. But
no,
over the long term, it works for rowing the boat the right direction and creates really some serendipitous moments. But on a day-to-day basis, it's very exhausting to have too many things on your plate.
Yeah. Right. When COVID first started, I was doing just like you said, I was on calls all day long. And I was like, this is great. I can do four times as many meetings and I don't have to travel. I can meet all these new people. And at the end of each call, you know, it was like one action that needed to happen. And it was like, okay, I'll put this on my to-do list and now on to the next call and then on to the next call. And then, you know, you get through four calls, you're completely exhausted. And then it's like, now I have to go back and follow up on what I said I was going to do on the other one, yeah. But my day is just packed and packed and packed on top of running companies and on top of
newborn,
all the other day to day. Yeah. Newborn. And now there's two of them and family and dogs. And, you know, there's just so much stuff that can be on your plate. And if you're not just honing in on what is the single thing that's going to generate the largest return of investment on my time, or if I can find an app that'll shave, and I hadn't even thought about this until one of our guests, she had said, you know, if you save 5 minutes per day, that's like 20 days of work in a year. And I was just like, there's no way that that's accurate. And it is. So if you can find something that shaves 5 minutes per day, you would effectively pay for 20 days of work just to save that 5 minutes. So you compound that, and apps can bring a ton of value, and things like Zapier. I mean, I hope they're not listening here. I would probably pay any amount of money for Zapier. The time that it saves
you. And it's a catch 22 because you get an app, you say, hey, this app's going to save me 20 minutes a week or, you know, half hour a week, and you implement it, and you know, you have that app, and then you just fill that 20 minutes with other busy work. It's amazing like how you
right.
just like you can't just be like, hey, I got really efficient, I could work just 8 hours a week now. You tend to fill it up. So no matter how efficient you get, you're going to naturally just fill it up with more work. I think it's just a human nature thing.
Yeah, there's a term for it and the name escapes me, but it's the amount of time it takes to do something will expand given the amount of time that you're allowed to do it. So for instance, my senior year of college, I took a class, and it, you know, unfortunately it would have been really beneficial for me to have participated in this class, but I didn't. And I never showed up to it. I was senior year. It didn't matter. And the guy sent an email like 2 weeks before the semester ended. And the whole class was one project. And I never started the project, never did anything. I had a whole semester to do it. But 2 weeks before the semester ends, he says, I'm giving you all A's. Turn in your project anytime before or after the semester ends. And I was like, well, I'm about to graduate. And this guy just gave me an A. And it was on data mining, which would have been so beneficial for me to have learned it when, and this is, you know, 10 years ago, like right at the beginning of everybody stealing my information and, oh, this is interesting how specific this ad is. I was just looking up shoes.
Yeah.
but I never ended up doing it and got the A, but like I should have been pacing out, but I had a whole semester to do it. I just put it off to the end, and I'm beating myself up that I can't think of what the phenomenon is, but you're right. We'll shave we'll shave 5 minutes, 20 minutes per day of work, but then we'll just fill it with stuff because we're in this information age where there's infinite stuff.
Yeah.
Infinite stuff.
And I think that there's an easy way to see the impact of that is like on the opposite side, like TikTok, you know, these are 15-second videos. But next thing you know, like to get rid of it. Like, so you know, you blow like an hour and you're like, how did I just watch a couple 15-second videos? And so it just kind of shows the opposite side of that, right? So how bad wasting 15 seconds is over and over and over again versus like if you can shave 15 seconds over and over again.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, where it comes down to having priorities on what's important to you, what's going to have the biggest impact. And I think that's a great place to leave off. David, thank you so much for being on the show. And where can people find out more about you? What's the best way?
The easiest way is on Twitter. I'm just at David Leary. That's probably the easiest. And then LinkedIn, I'm at David Leary. If you want to hit me up there, just say like, hey, I heard you on the podcast or something like that. So I know you're not a LinkedIn bot. Like, just give me some indication that you're a real person on LinkedIn. That would be helpful. But super easy to find. If you Google David Leary, though, that's the only problem because Google's like, there's no way possible you're looking for David Leary. And it'll just serve up a page of results of Dennis Leary. So you need to put something in like David Leary, David Leary accounting, David Leary cloud. You just got to add some other word on there, David Leary into it. But Google just is like, there's no way you could possibly be searching for David Leary. And they serve up Dennis Leary instead.
They really should have you pinned though at this point where at least you'd be getting the unique results for your own name.
I've tried. I've actually talked to an SEO optimizer guy and he's like, so I have to create content that has my name and his name in. So actually I do have like a page or some text on my domain for my name that's like, I am David Leary, not Dennis Leary. So that way at least maybe that page will bubble up.
That's perfect. Yeah. All right, guys. David Leary, not Dennis Leary. We'll be sure to put that in the SEO show notes so that you rank for the episode. Awesome. David, thank you so much for being on the Tech Talk for Accountants show. And guys, if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to subscribe. Send me a message on LinkedIn, what you liked, what you didn't like. We're always taking feedback, and I really appreciate it. And David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.